tap in. It's about time to tap into the Green Hornet and find out what we're going now from aluminum hair to polarized glasses. Wow, I mean, this is just the night for the strange, the unexpected. And we'll just see what it's about. And we'll hope that we'll have a few more calls, you know, come in after the wire here, as they often do when things get busy. But again, I thank you for your support to Old Time Radio this Saturday night. We'll be here tomorrow night, too. We'll be here for the next 51 weeks of the year, in part because somebody has called in and supported this program on this particular night. Now we go back to the night of May 28th, 1946, to one of those WXYZ Detroit productions. There were three major shows that came out of WXYZ. The Lone Ranger, Sergeant Preston of the Yukon, or the Challenge of the Yukon, which actually was produced across the river there in Windsor, Ontario. And this one, the Green Hornet. So enjoy, and thanks again for your support of Old Time Radio Drama this Saturday night.
The Green Hornet. He hunts the biggest of all game, public enemies who try to destroy our America. Faithful valet Cato, Britt Reeve, daring young publisher, matches wits with the underworld, risking his life that criminals and racketeers within the law may feel its weight by the sting of the Green Hornet. Ride with Britt Reeve in the thrilling adventure, Polarized Glasses. The Green Hornet strikes again. Lenore Case, secretary to Britt Reed, looked up as Mike Axford entered her office.
Good morning to you, Casey.
What on earth? Who do you think you are with those dark glasses on? A movie star in disguise, Michael?
Huh. I bet they look as good on me as they would on anyone else.
Don't bet too much on that. Well, what's the idea? They look like expensive ones, too.
Sure, gold rim ones they are. As a matter of fact, Casey, I found them and wore them in here just for a gag.
Oh, so that's it. I wondered.
Yep. Here's the case they were in.
Well, let's see. It's a nice case, too. Say, there's an address label pasted inside the cover. There's a name and address on it.
Sure, I know that.
Mrs. Davidson Forrest, apartment 101, Bayside Terrace. Quite a swanky address, Michael.
That it is, Casey. It's that big apartment house built right on the edge of the cliff along the bay. A lot of big shots live there.
You'd better send those glasses over to Mrs. Forrest today.
Send them, you say? Nothing doing. I'm taking them over myself in case there's a reward.
Oh, you would.
Sure. And what's more, who's to say that dame Mrs. Forrest ain't a good-looking widow with a lot of dough?
So that's it.
Casey, I knew you'd be jealous when I said that.
Jealous?
So you admit it, do you? You can't stand the thought of me maybe falling for the rich widow, so you flare up and you get mad.
What's the big joke around here?
All right, now, Axford is Mr. Reed. He found a pair of glasses. These. And the owner's name is inside the case. He decided she might be a widow, and that she might be rich.
In which case, she'd swoon at the sight of Axford and later drag him to the altar, isn't that it?
Oh, naturally, according to him.
Casey can't take a little kid and read. I'm going to return the glasses to the lady that owns them, Mrs. Forrest.
Mrs. Davidson Forrest of Bayside Terrace Apartments?
Yeah, that's her, all right. You know her, Reed?
Well, I've heard of her. In fact, I've been invited to a reception at her place day after tomorrow.
Huh. You never met her. How come you get invited?
You don't get around much, do you, Michael? She's probably invited the whole social register.
Well, Mrs. Forrest is a newcomer to the city. Does a lot of entertaining. Seems to have some wealth and manages to draw a good many prominent people to her affairs.
How come she gets to invite people she don't even know?
Oh, a swanky address, a good social secretary, and a prominent name as honor guest will get people to her affairs. For instance, on my invitation, it says, to meet Baron de Soroka.
Huh. She must be somebody to know a baron.
It might turn out that the guest of honor won't show up.
Why not?
Mr. Reed means there's a possibility there isn't any such person as the baron. It's just a come-on to get other prominent people to attend.
Huh. I'd go anyhow, baron or no baron. Well, I'm going to drive me jalopy over there this morning and take back her glasses. See you later, Reed. If she's a rich widow, Casey, maybe I can get you an invite to the wedding. So long! Sure, it's a swanky dump, all right. Just about noon. Maybe she'll invite me to stay and have a bit of lunch at her.
Yes, sir?
My name's Mike Axford, and I found something belonging to Mrs. Forrest. What's more, I ain't giving it to anyone else. So go tell her I'm here.
Please step inside, sir.
That I will.
I shall inform Mrs. Forrest that you're here, Mr. Axford.
Okay, I'll wait.
Very good, sir.
Them kind of guys always give me the willies. Can't tell whether they're smiling or sneering at a guy the way they look you over. What a joint.
Mrs. Forrest will see you, sir. Walk this way, please. Right in here. Mr. Axford, madame.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Axford.
Good morning, ma'am.
You may go, Charles.
Very good, madame.
I guess he thought he was going to get an earful.
I beg your pardon.
In the movies, you know, butlers are always listening to doors and the likes of that.
Oh, you've come on a confidential matter, perhaps?
No, I came because I found a pair of glasses belonging to you, ma'am. I got them here.
Oh, yes, my polarized glasses. How nice of you to bring them back to me, Mr. Axford.
It was the only honest thing to do, ma'am. Here they are.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm sure you wouldn't think of taking a reward, so I won't embarrass you by offering one.
Oh, you won't? Well, and now that I think of it, I guess I wouldn't think of it. That is...
Oh, great. You really have a very charming sense of humor, Mr. Axford.
I have. Yeah, that's right, I have.
My husband had no sense of humor whatsoever, poor thing. He was dreadfully boring.
Are you a widow by any chance, ma'am?
Yes, I am. I'm afraid I'm getting the reputation of being a very gay widow, too.
Oh. I know you were a widow. I was right.
You knew? I don't understand.
Oh, no matter. Hey, now. It's a fine place you got here. What's that out there? A balcony overlooking the water?
Oh, that's the terrace. Come see the view I have of the bay.
Sure. Glad to. Hey, now. You sure do have a view of that. Will you look at that swell-looking boat out there?
Oh, that's Baron de Soroka's yacht.
Is it really now? You know, I heard somebody say that Baron stuff was a fake.
You... I see. May I ask who it was who told you that?
Well, no. As we newspaper men say, it was said off the record, ma'am, so I won't mention names.
You're a newspaper man?
Oh, sure. Reporter on the Daily Sentinel. And if I do say so myself, a darn good one at that.
Really?
Yep. When Mike Axford goes out to get a story, he gets it one way or another. You can bet on that.
Well, I'm glad to know that. By the way, how would you like to meet the Baron, Mr. Axford?
You mean I'm invited to your party day after tomorrow?
Well, yes, of course. But the other guests are coming at 9:00. I'd like you to come earlier. Say at 8:00. Then you and the Baron can become acquainted.
Say now, that'll really be something, that it will. The others will have a fit when they hear I'm going to get a chance to have a long talk with the Baron.
Well, if you really hope to get a story, why not keep it a secret about your coming here ahead of time? Otherwise, some other reporter may try to get to the Baron before you do.
Say, that's a good idea. I'll keep quiet about it and surprise all of them. Thanks for inviting me, ma'am.
Oh, not at all. Shall we go inside now?
Okay.
I'll see you to the door, Mr. Exit.
Sure. Time I was getting back anyhow.
Let me thank you again for bringing my glasses to me.
Oh, that's okay, Mrs. Forrest.
Your hat,
sir. Huh? Oh, it's you.
You must have popped up from under the table.
The table, sir?
Sure, the table there that my hat was on. I'll take it. Thanks.
Well, good day, Mr. Axford. I'll be looking forward to seeing you the night of the reception.
I'll be here with bells on, ma'am. That I will. So long.
Charlie, that man's dangerous. We'll have to take a message out to the yacht tonight. We have plans to make.
That guy's too smart for his own good. He'll be sorry he stuck his nose into our business when Paul gets through with him. You can bet on that.
It was a few minutes before 8 on the night of the Forrest reception. Mrs. Forrest was in the living room of her apartment, in earnest conversation with the butler, and with a tall, dark-haired man in evening clothes, whose close-cropped Van Dyke beard and small mustache gave him a distinguished and foreign appearance.
It's almost 8 o'clock, Paul. He'll soon be here.
Are you sure you'll come alone, Lily?
Well, if he doesn't, it'll spoil everything. I tell you both, be on guard. That man Axford is dangerous.
Charlie says he was smart enough to play the dope when he came here.
Yeah, that's right. To look at him and talk to him, you'd think he was really dumb. But he was suspicious of Charlie right away, and he hinted that he knew the Baron was a fake.
Yeah, and he knew Lily was a widow. Then he made an excuse to get out on the terrace and mention the yacht.
Do you think he's working alone, Lily?
No, I don't. So you'll have to be careful. He said he was told the Baron was a fake. Well, I thought he was a government man at first, and then he said he was a reporter.
You checked that, of course.
Yes, there is a reporter named Axford on the Daily Sentinel. Made quite a point of seeing me personally to hand me my polarized glasses, too.
Charlie and I'll see that he's taken care of.
You'll have to play your part as the Baron very carefully until you get him on the terrace.
Yeah, he's heavy set. Looks like he might put up a good fight. We'll have to move in on him easy.
We will, don't worry. My role as the Baron is my biggest gamble yet. But my forged credentials are perfect. I have the backing of a certain government. My disguise has proven itself. I'm not going to let that snooping reporter crab everything right at the climax of our act.
Oh, he's at the door. Go let him in, Charlie.
Okay.
I'll stay only a minute, and then I'll suggest you two go on the terrace for cocktails. That'll give you your chance.
Right. Now, for the switch to the Baron's accent.
Mr. Michael Axford.
Good evening, Mrs. Forrest.
Mr. Axford. Oh, you're right on time. Baron de Soroka, may I present Mr. Axford?
Delighted, my dear Mr. Axford.
Glad to meet you, Baron.
I'll leave you two gentlemen alone so that you can get acquainted. I have so much to do before the other guests arrive.
You're most thoughtful, Madame Forrest.
Go right ahead, ma'am. Don't let us keep you.
I suggest you go out on the terrace. I'll have Charles bring cocktails.
So it's me. Eh, Baron? Let's go.
Of course.
Golly. Sure, tis a nice moonlight night, ain't it, Baron?
Yes, of course. It reminds me so much of the moonlight on the waters of that then-opened old Vienna. Look, far over there. Ah, such beauty.
Yeah. By the way, I want to ask you...
Good work, Charlie. Now we'll take this guy where he won't do any snooping for a long, long time.
We'll continue our Green Hornet adventure in just a moment. Almost an hour had passed since Mike Axford had met with foul play in Mrs. Forrest's apartment. Britt Reed, with his faithful valet Cato at the wheel, was driving along in a smart club coupe on the way to the Forrest reception. The road ran straight down to the bay. The Bayside Terrace Apartments was outlined to the left.
Directly in Britt's line of vision were the moonlit waters of the bay and the lights of the boats at anchorage.
View of water and boats much better when seen through a polarized glass of windshield, Mr. Britt.
Yes. Polarized windshields should be made standard equipment on all cars, Cato. I often think... Well, that's strange.
What you think strange?
Now look, see the outline of that yacht up in the bay?
Well, yes, sir.
Notice the light on it?
Oh, it seemed to flash off and on.
Well, that's it. It flickers as though someone were sending signals.
Is that true?
Now stop for a moment, Cato. We're watching. See? One, two, three. Pause, one. Now there's two very quick ones.
Well, there, one, two, pause, one.
And two more quick ones. There's no doubt those are signals of some kind, Cato.
With not Morse or international code.
I know. The two quick ones seem to indicate the end of a word or perhaps a letter. Oh, let's go down, Cato.
Yes, sir.
It won't do any harm for us to phone police headquarters and have them investigate.
Well, that best. If there's nothing wrong, there's no harm done by calling police.
That's right. Well, say, did Axford come home tonight? He left the office early.
Oh, yes, sir. Well, he come in with dinner suit. It not fit very well. It quite tight. He take your black pearl studs to wear.
I hope he doesn't lose one of them. Wonder where he's going.
Well, he not say, Mr. Britt. Well, here, Bayside Terrace.
I'm not going to stay long, Cato. You might as well wait for me.
I'll wait.
I'll see you later.
Good evening, Mr. Reed.
Well, Sergeant Burke, what are you doing around here? Something wrong?
No, nothing like that. I just drove over with a couple of the boys. This is a big affair, and the cars get pretty well jammed up unless we keep them moving.
Oh, I see. Oh, by the way, I was going to call headquarters, so I'm glad I ran into you. There's something I want you to see. Step out here to the curb where you can see the bay, will you?
Sure. What do you want me to look at?
Well, out there on that yacht. Notice the light? It flickers regularly as though signaling.
Well, I'm looking at it, but it ain't flickered yet, Mr. Reed.
Well, that's right. Well, I'll run along to the reception. If you find out anything about that light, let me know.
That I will, Mr. Reed. See you later.
Okay, Sergeant. I'll talk to you when I come out. I won't be long.
Mrs. Davidson Forrest's reception was in full swing. Diplomats, political figures, officials of state, and service officers intermingled with the city's social set. Britt Reed stood talking to one of his many acquaintances.
Did you meet the Baron, Britt?
Yes, for just a moment.
I understand his yacht is anchored right out there in the bay.
Really? I noticed the yacht a while ago as I drove here. I didn't know whose it was.
Yeah, that's a nice way to travel.
Yes, very. If you don't mind, I think I'll stroll out on the terrace and look at it again.
Sure, go ahead. Matter sorry, Brett.
Oh, Mrs. Forrest, admiring the view?
Oh.
Sorry, I didn't mean to startle.
Oh, that's perfectly all right. Mr.
Reed.
Oh, yes, of course. I should have remembered. But with so many, you know.
I understand. I've been noticing your dark glasses. Isn't it difficult out here to see?
Oh, these. I like to look at the light through them. You see, these are polarized lenses. They dispense with the glare.
Of course. I should have known. Well, I stepped on something. It felt like a bead.
Probably just a pebble. Sometimes the wind blows a few onto the terrace. If you don't mind, I'll go back to my guest.
Yes, of course. I'll have a look at whatever it was I stepped on. Light my lighter. Looks like... black pearl stuff. Real pearl, too, or it would have been crushed under my foot. These aren't too common. Well, this one is mine. I can tell from the setting. Have a look around. Axford must be here someplace. He must have crashed the gate.
A short time later, Rick Reed left the apartment house. He learned from Sergeant Burke that the light had not flickered and that Axford had not been seen going to the party. After returning to his own apartment, Reed sat in deep thought, holding the pearl stud in his hand. Then Cato spoke.
What you think of, Mr. Britt?
This is one of my very own studs that Axford was wearing tonight. Yet Burke says he didn't go into the reception.
Yet you find stud on terrace of Mrs. Forrest's apartment?
That's right. Then I keep thinking of those signal flashes. Or at least that's what we thought they were. Burke says the light has been steady ever since I told him about it.
Well, yes, that's true. I watch also through back window of car, but light stays steady.
Another thing I've been thinking of is Mrs. Forrest standing on the terrace away from her guests looking at the view, which she can see any time. She has polarized glasses just for the purpose of looking at... Wait a minute.
What matter?
I just thought of something. We're going back down there, Cato. We'll check things once more. But this time, we'll take the Black Beauty just in case. Come on.
We are on road that go down to Bayside Terrace. Why not see any cars? The party all over, perhaps.
Yes, Cato, it's late. Look, that light's flickering again, Cato.
Well, that's right.
Stop in the shadows, and then we'll watch it again. I'll get out a pencil and a bit of paper. We'll keep track of those flashes and try to figure out the code.
For some time, Britt and Cato sat watching the light, jotting down the number of flashes. Suddenly, Britt spoke.
Cato, I think I've hit the code. The flashes before the short pauses seem always to run numerically from 2 to 9. None over, and no ones.
Well, that's right.
The flashes after the pauses run only from 1 to 3. I'm convinced they're using the telephone dial as a code. There are 3 letters in each circle from 2 to 9. So that flashing, let's say 2, pause 1, that could be the letter A and so on.
Well, that code, all right.
Okay. Then let's put together what we've written down and see what they were saying with that light.
What'd you get, Mr. Britt?
Listen. Drop roll from wire recorder on line to ledge below terrace. We'll send for. And this says, give warning if reporter trace there.
Would that be in Oxford, perhaps?
I think so. And these messages were directed to that woman's apartment. I don't see how... Wait a minute. Cato, lean out here and look at that light.
Yes, sir. Will light not flicker now?
Now look through the polarized windshield.
Well, now it flicker, Mr. Britt.
That's it, Cato. Axford must have found out something. He went to that party and something happened. He's in danger on that yacht, I'm sure of it. Get going, Cato. We have work to do and fast.
A short time later at police headquarters...
Funny how Britt Reed thought he saw signal flashes coming from the light on the Baron's yacht, Cassidy.
Yeah, guess that guy needs glasses, Sarge.
Well, I don't know. But I sure couldn't see anything wrong with that light. It was as steady as... Glory be, what's that?
A bomb! Somebody threw it in the window.
That ain't any bomb. It's a stone. Something tied to it. Let's see what it is.
It's a printed note. Read it, Sarge.
Well, give me a chance. Give me a chance. That Baron's a fake and his yacht's a spy's nest. Raid that yacht and you'll save the life of a reporter named Axford. Then go to the Forest Dame's apartment for the rest of the gang. Great day. Let's check on this. Get the harbor police on the phone. We got work to do. Mike Axford's mixed up with spies.
We find roll of recorded wire, Mr. Britt, on ledge below terrace. Now what we do?
We'll wait here just outside until we hear a commotion from the yacht. Then we'll go inside.
Well, maybe police come here before we get it.
There go the harbor police to the yacht.
The men on yacht shoot at police.
Yes. Come on. That's our cue for some action.
Later in Mrs. Forrest's apartment...
Charlie!
What's going on out there?
The police must be raiding the yacht. We better get out of here in a hurry.
What's the rush, lady? You're not going any place.
Oh.
The Green Hornet.
You'll not shoot. Hornet.
Oh!
Don't
that roll of wire. Where'd you get that?
Stop worrying, lady. This'll help you to do it.
No.
The police will soon come. We'll leave them here with that roll of recorded wire and her polarized glasses as evidence. Let's get out of here.
Later in Britt Reed's apartment, soon after Sergeant Burke brought Axford home...
Wasn't that some story we got, Reed?
Yes, it was, Axford.
I still don't get it how polarized glass works.
Polarized glass?
Yeah, that's how the spies worked. They used polarized glass in front of the searchlight.
Oh, so that's it.
Well, how's it work?
Well, polarized glass breaks a light beam into a very thin beam.
Like in Venetian blinds?
Well, something of that sort. It's used to cut down glare and reflection. I have it in my car's windshield. Now, if two pieces of polarized glass are held together in a certain way, they cut off the light. If I look through my polarized windshield at the headlight of a car, and that headlight has a lens of polarized glass set in the right way, I won't see the light at all.
That's it. Mrs. Forrest had glasses like your windshield. Those guys on the boat held polarized glass over the light, and it was cut off for Mrs. Forrest.
And for me when I saw it through the windshield of my car.
Yeah, and people seeing the light without looking through that trick glass didn't notice any change.
That's how those lugs could send signals no one but the dame could see. They made dots and dashes by covering and uncovering the searchlight with the polarized glass. And she saw those dots and dashes because she had on polarized glasses.
That's it.
Reed, there's more to tell you. That baron was a fake. He was just a come-on to get important officials to Mrs. Forrest's party. Then when they were talking confidential, she'd give the butler a signal and he'd start the wire recorder going. Microphones were hid all over the place. They got important bits of news for the foreign power that paid him.
Amazing. Sergeant, you did a swell job of breaking that case. How you did it is hard for me to say.
Huh. It ain't hard for me to say it. 'Twas a tip-off by somebody that did it. I'll bet it was the Green Hornet. 'Cause when we found them spies, there was a Green Hornet seal on the wire recorder. And to think the whole thing started over me finding them polarized glasses. Ain't it amazing?
Popular radio dramas created by George W. Trendle are a copyrighted feature of The Green Hornet, Incorporated. All characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious.
An episode of The Green Hornet, The Polarized Glasses, from May 28th, 1946. Next stop, Dimension X, as old-time radio drama continues this Saturday night, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Adventures in time and space, told in future tense.
Dimension X.
Can you predict the future? Can you tell what will happen in 100 years? Or in 10? Or in the next minute? Can you look beyond the known dimensions of time and space into the unknown, Dimension X? Tonight we have a strange story to tell. A sweet, blood-curdling little story that is really only 2 sentences long. The last man on Earth sat alone in a room. There was a knock on the door. Think it over. Suppose you were the last man alive on Earth. In the universe, for that matter.
The last man, sitting alone in a room, and suddenly, there was a knock on the door. What knocked on the door? You wonder, don't you? Your mind, faced with the unknown, supplies something vaguely horrible. But it isn't horrible, really. You'll see. The last man on Earth sat alone in a room. There was a knock on the door.
Hmm? What? Oh, what's that?
Good morning, man.
What? Who are you?
You have regained consciousness.
Well, who are you?
I am Azan.
Maybe if I close my eyes, it'll go away.
I will not go away, man.
No, I guess I am awake. Who? What are you?
I am Azan.
Well, what's that?
Azan is intelligent life.
What happened? Where are you from?
From planet 7 in the third galaxy in the fourth quadrant.
Where?
It is not necessary to repeat information which is correct in the original statement.
Planet 7? You mean I'm not on Earth?
You are still on your planet.
Well, then what are you doing here?
The Zans have annexed your world.
You mean you've conquered Earth?
Yes, that is correct. We will now prepare your planet for habitation by the Zan.
How about the people?
There is no longer any use for large numbers of lower life forms. Therefore, we have dispensed with them.
Dispensed with? You mean you've... When did all this happen?
2 days ago. You have been unconscious until now.
You really mean I'm the last man on Earth?
That is correct. Identify yourself now.
What?
Kindly provide data as to your position in the elementary social order of your planet.
I'm Walter Phelan, associate professor of anthropology at Nathan University. How is it you speak English?
We have deciphered your written and recorded records. It is not difficult to reconstruct your language. It is a primary type of auditory communication.
Oh.
Is there anything you want to complete your natural habitat?
You mean I'm a prisoner?
That is correct. What will you want further in your room?
Well, do I have to stay here?
Yes.
The rest of my life?
Forever.
Then you better bring in my books. I gotta call you something. Do you mind if I call you, George?
It is immaterial.
All right, then, George. You know, I can't really believe this.
That is a characteristic of low-life form.
I'm trying to take this in without going off balance completely.
I will be back, Associate Professor of Anthropology.
It's all right, George. Just call me Walter.
Very well, Walter. I will be back with your books.
All right, George. I'll be seeing you around.
You will not be around, Walter. You will be here.
Yes, the last man on Earth sat alone in a room. A rather peculiar room. He just noticed how peculiar it was, and he'd been studying out the reason for its peculiarity. His conclusion didn't horrify him, but it annoyed him. There was a knock on the door.
Come in. Oh. Hello, George.
Hello, Walter.
What can I do for you?
Point one, you will please henceforth sit with your chair pointed the other way.
I thought so. That plain wall is different from the other sides, isn't it?
That is correct. It is transparent.
That's what I thought. I'm in a zoo. Right?
That is correct.
I knew it. And if I persist in sitting with my back to it, what then? You'll kill me, I ask, hopefully?
No, we will not kill you.
That's too bad. George, how many other animals do you have here in the zoo, George?
216. A male and female each of 108 kinds.
Male and female of all the animals?
There is a female of your species among the collection.
Anyone I know? Never mind, it doesn't matter anyway. Well, George, you started out with point one. I suppose there's a point two kicking around somewhere. What is it?
Something we do not understand. Two of the other animals sleep and do not wake. They are cold. What is wrong with them, Walter?
Well, they must be dead.
Dead? That means stopped. But nothing stopped them. Each was alone.
Sure, they just died.
But I have told you they were alone. Nothing stopped them.
George, do you mean to tell me that you don't know what natural death is?
Death is when a being is killed, stopped from living.
Maybe these animals just died of old age.
Old age? I do not understand.
George, how old are you?
Your planet went around the sun about 7,000 times since I was born.
7,000 years?
Yes, I'm still young.
Look, George, you've got something to learn about this planet you've hijacked. Here on Earth, we've got somebody that's a stranger where you come from. Down here, our people and animals live until the Grim Reaper stops them.
This Grim Reaper stopped the two animals?
That's right.
He will stop more?
Oh, he gets us all, George.
This is a new factor we have not considered.
Well, you can consider it. Because when the Grim Reaper gets through, there won't be very much left of your zoo.
You mean he will stop more animals soon?
Well, with your lifespan, it won't seem like a minute, and we'll all be gone. Now, it looks like you made a mistake, George. I don't think there's very much you can do about it.
That is not correct. The Zan is a logical being. We will take action.
Taking me, George.
We will be there shortly.
You mean, it's moving day?
That is correct. We are here now. You will live here now, Walter. It is a larger room.
Well, be it ever so humble.
Go inside.
Be careful with those books, George. Don't lose. Excuse me.
Who are you? What are you doing here?
Well, I guess George didn't explain. George tries to be polite, but he hasn't quite caught on yet. I'm Walter Phelan.
My name is Grace Evans, Mr. Phelan. What is all this about? Why did they bring me here?
I think I know why.
Why?
You see, I've been talking to George.
George?
Well, that's what I call them, all of them. There's no way to tell them apart anyway. There aren't many of them here, yet. They come from outside the solar system, sort of an advanced scouting party.
Yes, I saw their spaceship. It's as big as a mountain.
They're moving in on us. They cleaned off the Earth with some kind of vibration that destroys all sorts of animal life. They killed everybody.
Oh, no. I was afraid.
Well, the cheerful note is that you and I and 200-odd other animals were picked up beforehand as specimens for the zoo. You know that this is a zoo, don't you?
Yes. I suspected it. But I don't remember anything about being captured. I just woke up here.
Well, they solved a lot of problems for us. Housing shortages. Wars. I don't suppose the human race, you and I, that is, have to worry about anything now.
It's awful.
Only they made one mistake. They overestimated us.
I don't understand.
They thought we were immortal.
That we were what?
Immortal, like they are. Oh, they can be killed. The Zans don't know what natural death is. They didn't know anyway until they lost two of us yesterday.
You mean there are more than two of us?
No more of our species. These were merely brother animals. A rabbit and a canary. And by the Zans' way of figuring time, the rest of us are only good for a few minutes apiece anyway. That's a joke on them. They figured they had permanent specimens here in their zoo.
But didn't they know that we'd all die eventually?
No, I don't think so. See, George told me he was 7,000 years old, and he's supposed to be young. When they learned how quickly we die, well, they were probably shocked to the core. If they have cause.
How can you talk that way about it?
Academic detachment. I learned it at faculty teas. At any rate, they've decided to reorganize their zoo. Two by two.
Oh.
Sure, they figure we'll last longer collectively, if not individually.
But if they think... That is, if you think for 1 minute...
No, don't worry. I don't.
But are they going to keep us locked up together in this one little room?
I'm afraid so.
It's horrible.
I agree with you perfectly, my dear. But all personal considerations aside, the least favor we can do the human race is to let it end with us. I don't see much point in continuing it just for an exhibition in a zoo.
How can you just sit here and lecture?
Habit.
But we've got to do something.
Why?
I don't know. It just seems we owe it to the human race to do something.
You got a suggestion?
There must be some way. They can be killed, you said.
I think that anything that would kill one of us would kill one of them. You see, I figured it out, I think. George cut his... I suppose you'd call it his hand when he brought in my books. It started to bleed, red blood. But I could see the cut closing just as he stood there. And by the time he left, it was healed.
Don't understand.
Don't you see? Whatever factor there is in man that makes him grow old is missing in the Zahn. They just go on and on and on until... Well, until they're stopped.
Yes. But suppose we killed one. There must be some way.
Well, but what would be the use? They wouldn't even punish us. They'd just give us our food through a trap door and put a sign out saying, "Beware of the man, dangerous."
I don't think they'd have to bother in your case. I don't see anything funny.
I'm sorry. This reminds me of Martha.
Martha?
My wife. She died 2 years ago.
I'm sorry.
Oh, not at all. Oh, it'll be George with my books. Come in. Hello, George.
Hello, Walter. Point one, I have brought your books.
Point one? Well, what else is on your mind?
Point two, another creature sleeps and will not wake. A small feathered one called a duck.
It happens, George. I warned you. Old man Death, the Grim Reaper. I told you all about him.
Walter, the Council of Zahn has met. It has been decided logically that the only intelligent life to escape the vibration is you. Therefore, the logical conclusion is you are stopping these animals by some means unknown to us.
George, you're off your trolley.
You will tell me now how this is done.
You boys afraid you're going to lose the whole zoo?
It is necessary to save the remaining specimens as long as possible. If we do not get information, we may be forced to dispense with your species entirely.
Now, wait a minute.
This means you, Walter, and the female.
Now, wait a minute, George. Don't go off half-cocked. Let me take a look at these animals that won't wake up.
I will take you there now. Go first, Walter.
After you, my dear George.
This is the weasel.
You should have got him in the winter, George. The fur's worth more then. Then it's an ermine.
This is the reptile cage. Here are the ducks. This is the male. The female has been stopped.
Lucky girl. What's the matter, fella? You lonely down there?
Walter, you will tell me how you stopped the female duck.
You got me, George. I didn't do it. Maybe she died of the Dutch elm blight.
Walter, you are not being logical. We have concluded you are stopping these animals. Tell us how it is done.
I told you, George, I haven't the foggiest notion.
Very well. We will have to take further action.
What are you going to do, George?
We have methods of action you will know soon. We will go back now to your room.
What happened, Mr. Taylor?
Call me Walter. After all, George does, and we have more in common.
Oh, please, what happened?
Just the duck, a dead duck. George thinks I killed her by remote control. He thinks I'm holding out on him.
Good.
What?
Well, at least we can get back at them. At least we can do something to them.
Well, why? After all, George isn't a bad fellow, if you like an ant mentality.
How can you say that? They've wiped out the whole human race. They've murdered everybody.
I suppose they have, but we can't change that now, so why think about it?
Well, we can't just sit here and do nothing.
I fail to see how we can do anything else.
Oh, of all the men in the world they had to pick, don't you want to fight back? Don't you want to keep on fighting until the end?
It hadn't occurred to me.
But we've got to, Walter.
Why?
Well, I can't really explain, but, Walter, if there was any good in man at all, it was that he kept on struggling against nature and in the end even against himself. But at least he kept on fighting for what he thought was right, and we're all that's left. Walter, we just can't end it by giving up. We've got to keep on fighting.
You know, you do remind me of Martha.
Oh, look, there isn't much left for us, but we could beat them in this one small thing. We can pretend that there's a secret about death, and we could refuse to tell them anything.
But there isn't anything to tell.
Well, they don't know that. Promise me you won't give in.
I suppose the worst they can do is to kill us.
Oh, Walter.
All right, Miss Evans. Hello, George.
Hello, Walter. Now, you will tell us how these animals are stopped.
George, This may come as a great shock to you. But I've decided not to tell you.
Why?
Oh, call it a romantic attachment to lost causes. My grandfather was a Confederate officer.
Walter, you are not being logical. But that is expected in lower life forms. You will come with me now, Walter.
Where are you taking him?
To the second level. Come now, Walter.
You won't tell them.
I can't guarantee anything, but as of now, I don't intend to.
We've got to fight. Remember that, Walter. We've got to go out fighting.
I think you're right.
Come now, Walter.
Goodbye.
It's been a pleasure, Miss Evans.
I am waiting. Come now, Walter.
After you, my dear George.
You will tell us now, Walter. That was the first level of vibration. There are many more. However, we have calculated that none of them exceed your threshold of unconsciousness.
Oh, very clever, George.
Of course. You will tell us now, how do you stop these animals? You will tell us now?
As of now, no. However, I'm not very brave, if that encourages you, George.
You are not being logical, Walter.
You're telling me.
We will now use vibration level 2. You will tell us now?
You know, George, I can't figure it out myself, but I'm stubborn. Maybe it has something to do about the dignity of man, the civilization such as it was that you wiped out.
I do not understand.
I didn't think you would. So go ahead. Vibrate.
Vibration level 2. It will be very painful, Walter. Walter? Walter? You are still conscious.
Let me alone, George.
You will tell us now. You will tell us how you stopped the animals.
Let me alone.
We have had vibration levels 1 through 10. There are still 15 more before your threshold of unconsciousness.
No, let me alone.
Walter, listen to me. Another creature sleeps and will not wake. We must know now.
That's tough. You better start vibrating again, George.
No.
What?
It would not be logical. We have calculated that no further level of vibration will overcome your irrational psychological block. We conclude you will not tell.
You mean you're going to let me go?
That is correct.
That's real nice of you, George. I appreciate it.
We have calculated that the resistance of the female of your species will be lower. We will now place her under the vibrations.
Oh, no, George, you can't do that.
Why not, Walter? It is the logical plan.
No, she couldn't take it.
Yes, that is what we expect. Therefore, we will go and bring the woman here.
No, now listen to me, George. There is no secret. Do you understand that? There's no secret. Those animals died from natural causes. And I'm telling you the truth.
That is not a logical answer. We will get the woman.
Well, I've told you the truth. Can't you understand?
We must know now. The female animal cage next to the duck has been stopped. We must preserve the survivor.
The animal next to the duck?
We will bring the woman here. She will tell us after the vibration.
No, listen, George. George, do you want... You want the truth? You want to know how to save the mates of the animals that have been stopped?
You will tell us now?
Yes, I'll tell you. Take me to that stopped animal, and I'll tell you how to save its mate.
Very well, Walter. You are being logical now. We will go.
Walter, are you all right?
Yeah, Just let me catch my breath a minute.
What happened?
Well, after a while, I told them what they wanted to know.
You didn't?
Sure. As George pointed out, it seemed to be the logical thing at the time.
You gave up?
I suppose you can call it that. Look, I'm buried.
Bed.
Something might turn up, Martha.
But they've beaten us completely, then. There isn't anything we can do left of the human race. And we give up. We don't even die fighting. You call me?
Oh, must have said Martha. I'm sorry.
The Council of the Zan has met.
Something wrong? She was my wife. She died 2 years ago. What were you saying?
Nothing. Nothing. It doesn't matter. It's too late. It's too late. The whole...
What now, George?
Zahn has been stopped.
What?
Zahn is dead?
That is correct.
You didn't believe me, George. But you can die. You can really die. You'll have to get used to that if you're going to stay here.
The council has decided. A, you have in some way stopped this Zahn. B, you and the woman must be eliminated.
Oh, you got it wrong, George. I didn't stop that Zahn. It's just death. It gets all of us here.
You will be eliminated now.
But, George, it won't do any good to kill us. It won't save you. Everything that lives on Earth must die.
That is not logical.
But it's true.
The council has decided. This time, you will have the full vibration.
This time? Walter, what did they do to you?
They have a rather effective third degree.
They tortured you, Walter?
Yes, yes.
And I... Walter, it was all my fault.
I wouldn't even have tried without you. I suppose we have a last chance now to end with some dignity.
I think you're a very brave man.
Well, there isn't much else to do. Do we go now, George?
Now, Walter.
Wait, what's that?
I have been told another Zahn has died.
Now? Now will you believe me?
The Council of the Zahn meets now.
Two gone already, and you were with me, George. You know I didn't kill this one.
What stopped him then?
I told you, it's old man death. You came to the wrong planet, George. Your immortality doesn't go down here. He can stop you, but you can't stop him. And you'll all die if you stick around. And now what?
The Council has decided this is a place of death. We will leave your planet.
Leave? You mean you're giving up?
It is not safe for the Zahn.
Walter, they're leaving. They're really going.
Go on then, George, and don't hurry back.
It would not be logical to do so. We are leaving the Earth now. Goodbye, Walter.
Goodbye, George. Well, they're all aboard now.
So wonderful to feel the wind and the sun again.
Close the hatches.
Walter, is it safe for us to be out here?
Sure, they're not interested in us any longer. They only want to get away. And I want to see this grace, the Zahn leaving Earth forever. Now they're blasting off.
There they go.
Yes, it's over now. Well, I suppose we might as well go back in.
I still don't understand, Walter. What made them go?
Oh, I just told them the facts of life.
Of death, you mean?
No, no. No, of life. After all, I thought George was old enough to know at 7,000 years he was getting to be a pretty big boy.
I wish you'd stop joking and tell me what happened.
Look out for the step. Well... Do you remember when the first animals died?
Yes, the rabbit and the canary.
Mm, and their mates just started to pine and waste away.
Yes.
Well, that worried the Zahn. They wanted to keep the last specimens alive if they could. So, finally, I broke down and told them about... affection.
Affection?
Mm-hmm. And then I introduced Donald.
Donald? Who's that?
There we are.
Oh.
Come here. Grace, I want you to meet Donald.
Oh, Walter, please. What does affection have to do with it?
Well, that's what the Zahn wanted to know. I told him it was love that made the world go round. That having lost his mate, Donald would die immediately unless he had affection and constant petting.
Petting?
Mm-hmm. I even showed him how. Come here, fella. Come here. Come here. Yes, I held Donald in my arms and petted him a while, and then I let the Zahn take over with the animal in the next cage.
What animal?
Take a look. Hey, watch out. Don't go
Walter,
close.
It's a rattlesnake.
Yes, it's a rattlesnake. The Zahn's metabolism made it impossible for them to die of old age, but I had a hunch they could be poisoned.
And it was the snake that killed the two Zahn.
They never even knew what bit them.
Then you outwitted them, Walter.
I suppose.
And I thought you'd just given up. Oh, Walter, I'm so proud of you.
You don't have to be. I had given up. I probably wouldn't have fought at all if you hadn't pushed me.
Well.
Well. We've got a world to plan, a whole new world, Grace.
I know.
We'll have to decide which animals to let out of the zoo and which ones would be safer to keep in. But first, there's a much bigger problem.
What's that?
The human race.
Oh.
Yeah, we've got to make a decision about that. It's a pretty important one.
Yes. But...
It hasn't been a bad race. Of course, it may go backward for a while until it gets its breath, but... Well, we can save the books and all the most important things and get it started ahead once more.
Please, Walter.
It's the Garden of Eden.
Oh, don't be
all
ridic-
over again.
Don't be ridiculous, Walter.
Funny. Even blush like Martha. Only you're stronger than she was. And prettier, too.
I wish you'd forget about Martha.
I think I will, my dear, if you'll only give me a little time.
Now, Walter Phelan, you listen to me. If you think for 1 minute that we...
I thought it would never happen to me again. But it is love that makes the world go round. And so, Grace, if you could only...
I wouldn't marry you if you were the last man on Earth.
But that's exactly what I am.
I don't care. I don't even want to talk about it. I'm going out.
Well, all right, my dear, but think it over and please come back. You see, I told him. It wasn't really so horrible, our story. Remember how it goes. The last man on Earth sat alone in a room. And then, there was a knock on the door.
Come in.
Come in. Come in. My dear. You see, it wasn't horrible at all.
Just heard the Frederick Brown story entitled Knock, an adventure in time, space, and the unknown world of the future, the world of Dimension X.
Now, about next week. Next week we tell the story of a robot, but a robot that was almost human.
Tonight's adventure in Dimension X was adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Arnold Moss was heard as Walter Phelan, Louis Van Ruten as the Zahn, and Joan Alexander as Grace Evans. Your narrator was Norman Rose. Music by Albert Berman, engineer Bill Chambers. Dimension X is produced by Van Woodward and directed by Edward King. Tomorrow, hear Sam Spade. Now it's Truth or Consequences on NBC.
Dimension X, from May 6, 1950, with an elaboration on a very famous science fiction story, Knock. I'm Norman Gilliland. Thanks for joining me by the glow of your radio this Saturday night. Remember, we'll have three more hours of old-time radio drama tomorrow night and each Saturday and Sunday night right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.